This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
Side of Midnight. I usually like to keep things light on a Friday, particularly in this hour, but it is a little more difficult to keep things lighter when we're seeing countries bomb one another, including nuclear powers potentially involved, and when we are getting closer and closer to the precipice of a major global conflict. So I thought we could all use a little bit of information in terms of what's going on in the Middle East now, at least as we understand it. If you're just waking up, if you haven't heard the news from last night, Israel has launched a strike against Iran, and that's what we know. Their targets that they've hit have not been nuclear. Beyond that, we don't have very many other details. Someone who may is a veteran war correspondent, the chief international correspondent for many, many years, over 3.5 decades. He joins us live from Belgium right now. Very pleased to welcome to the program Elijah Magnier. Elijah, thanks so much for joining me on the radio. I can imagine how busy you must be right now.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be with you.
So, Elijah, give us the facts as we know them. How severe were these attacks that Israel carried out in Iran, and what's the situation like in Iran as best we understand it?
Well, the situation in Iran is quite normal. The domestic and international flights are working perfectly well. People do their business business as usual. Nothing has changed, really. What happened in the middle of the night in Isfahan, Iran, is the 3 very small drones were intercepted by a very sophisticated Iranian radars, because the size of these drones is really extremely small. And it's not easy to be detected. Usually they are not detectable. And it is obvious that they flew from a short distance because they have a very short lifetime battery. And they did not carry any weapon, or they were not representing any threat. However, due to the tension that exists in the Middle East and West Asia following the war on Gaza, the Israeli attack on the Iranian diplomatic mission in Damascus and destroying the consulate, and the Iranian retaliation and the promise of retaliating to the retaliation, we understand that the Iranians were very much on alert, and they would fire on anything that is moving in the sky, ready to respond and bomb Israel if necessary. However, we understand that the Americans don't have appetite for this war, and they don't want the escalation to mount, because they have bases in the Middle East, because they don't think the Israeli response to the Iranian retaliation is worth it or is going to impose any deterrence. It was a violation of the 1961 Vienna Convention by Israel that bombed a diplomatic mission. Iran retaliated not to hurt Israel, but to measure the retaliation, imposed deterrence on the Israelis, saying, if you hit our territory, we're going to hit you back, because the consulate is considered an Iranian territory, which is obvious, as every diplomatic mission is considered the country's own territory. And that's it, really. I think this the incident is over now.
So this is very interesting. So essentially what you're saying, and we're talking with Elijah Magnier, and again, you're not in Iran, you're in Belgium, but you're closer to Iran than I am, and certainly you have great sources there. So it sounds like, you know, I'm looking at five television sets right now. All of them are doing breathless coverage showing the headline, Israel has launched a strike against Iran, Israel strikes Iran. What you're saying, essentially, if I understand it, is almost nothing happened.
Exactly. I spoke to a dozen of sources among the Iranian officials, sources that well-established first-hand contact that I have established. I've covered the Iran-Iraq war. I've been in Iran so many times. I've covered the Iraq war, the Syrian war, the Libyan war, the Lebanese, the Israeli invasion. I've covered dozens of wars in the Middle East, and I have solid contacts, including within the IRGC, that do not deliver really propaganda. If we listen to what the Israelis are saying, in particular, the Minister of Security, National Security, Itamar Ben-Gvir, he was laughing about what happened. So what's happening is, in my guess, the Americans are inflating the news, which is very positive, because it is giving those who are skeptical and those who are warmongers wanting a war in the Middle East that nobody understands where it can go, nobody can stop, anyone can start it but not stop it, and they saying, wow, Israel has retaliated. Okay, you've retaliated, then this is the end of it. That is the positive side of it. And this is what the American and Western media is distributing and is saying at the moment. However, I think in the next 48 hours, they will wake up on what the Israelis are saying, because they're quite sharp, particularly in criticizing the government at the moment. And they will reveal the reality of the information. We have not heard explosions on the ground. People in Isfahan I spoke to confirmed that there was no explosion on the ground, but only in the air. They've heard three explosions only.
Wow.
And that corresponds to the story of the Iranians. So they have intercepted. What is remarkable is we have never seen a country capable of intercepting such a small drone, which means not only the Iranians are on alert, but they have gone beyond what we know about the interception system and radar system. And another point is they are ready to retaliate. Had they estimated that that was considered an attack, President Ibrahim Raisi of Iran said, we will respond right within only a few minutes. And Iran considered this case is closed.
So, you know, when I first saw the headline that Israel was attacking Iran, I was thinking this was very bad news because I was fearful this would lead to a lot of death and destruction in Iran and then a lot of serious Iranian retaliation. But if what I'm hearing from you is accurate and your sources, this strikes me as potentially great news in that this could be the end, at least for a while, of any armed hostilities between Israel and Iran.
You are absolutely right. It is not going to be the end for a while. I think it's going to be the end of a very long time. Nevertheless, that doesn't never eliminate intelligence hits, which means Mossad, CIA, Iranian, the Iranian allies in the Middle East. These are small hits that all the countries in the Middle East are accustomed to, and they do not provoke a war. So trying to assassinate a person here and there, attributing that to local opposition, it is very common. And again, as you rightly said, this is not going to trigger a war. And particularly in the presidential election, now that we're coming closer and closer, never ever a war in the Middle East has started. And those who started the war had the visibility when to end it. You look at Afghanistan, look at Iraq, look at Syria, Libya, they all still ongoing.
Right.
So there's no visibility what's going to happen next. And this is why the Americans are adamant about imposing on everybody in the Middle East, we are not going to be involved. We don't want to war. Just keep calm. This is not the time to have war because it is going to be damaging for everybody.
Very interesting. Talking with Elijah Magnier about this situation with Israel and Iran. So if these drones from Israel were shot down over the air, what exactly were these drones as best we know them? Were they intended to be aggressive and military in nature, or was it something else, potentially a surveillance drone or something along those lines?
They are drones with a camera that are used by many people, including civilians in the West. Here we have these small drones with camera. Journalists have them. Television crews have dozens of them. It is very common everywhere in the West. However, in Iran, it can be just a message to bother, really, the Iranians. And to also test how ready they are, and if something else is sent, not only a small drone, but a bigger drone, is it going to be intercepted? So the message now is, as we know in Iran, there are 89 million people. Of these 89 million people, there are opposition in the northwest, the Kurds, there are opposition in the southeast, that is the Sistan, Baluchistan. So there are opposition to the Iranian Revolutionary Guard and to the Iranian Islamic Republic. Therefore, it is very easy to attribute these attacks to these kind of people. You have Jaish al-Adl in the south and so many other people who can claim their responsibility, and Israel can defend itself by saying, it is not me, and that doesn't trigger a war. So sending these three very small, tiny drones, it's a test, really, and saying, if we want to hit you, we can hit you, or if you're not on alert, then we can test something bigger. So the message has been received, the retaliation has been received, the readiness now is very obvious, and the reason why the Iranians regain all flights as normal and life has returned to normality, and the attack happened at night. So even at night, the Iranian radars were able to detect these drones. So it means life has returned to normality, and this incident is closed, yet everybody is still on alert.
Wow. Let me ask you about what happened on Saturday, the Iranian attack on Israel, where thankfully nobody was killed. The publication The Intercept reported that about half of these Iranian missiles were essentially duds. And there's been speculation that Iran signaled to Israel and potentially the United States, either directly or indirectly, what they were going to do so they could take proper precautions so that Iran could save face for retaliating for that consulate bombing and the murder of their military officers, but it wouldn't lead to a wider escalation. What do you think about that, Elijah? Is this a function of Iran wanting to put on more of a show, or was this a function of Israeli and American military defense technology simply being superior to Iran's offensive weaponry?
Iran and the Americans have exchanged many letters in the last few months. And the Americans sent four secret letters to the Iranians. The Iranians sent back a letter through the Swiss embassy in Tehran just a few days before the attack, saying they confirmed they're going to attack Israel and retaliate for the Israeli violation of the Vienna Convention. And the Americans advised the Iranian not to do so, but the Iranians went ahead. But what Iran did, and you have highlighted an important point here to explain it, the intention of Iran was not to destroy Israel. The intention of Iran was not to inflict damage on Israel. The intention of Iran was to go, in the first place, impose deterrence because its consulate was destroyed. Secondly, is to tell the Israelis, if you go beyond a certain limit, we have the courage to hit you, and we're going to hit you. Three is to say the idea is for you to be ready for the hit, because we don't want to create a wider damage. Because you imagine 300 ballistic missiles and drones reaching Israel, causing the damage that 300 ballistic missiles can cause, that would definitely trigger a war, regardless the reason behind it and who started first. So because of that, the intention was to go and hit exactly the military air base where the F-35 took off to destroy the Iranian consulate. And Iran managed, by flooding the interception missile of Israel, because the Israelis have the Iron Dome, the Arrow 2, Arrow 3, and they have David Sling, and they have the Patriot. And in the air, there were the Jordanian Air Force, there were the Americans, the French, and the British, and there were a few pieces of NATO in the sea next to Cyprus. All have contributed to down the cruise missile and the drone, which is something that was fine with Iran and did not felt that its mission did not reach the objective. On the contrary, the objective was to tell to the Israelis, we broke this taboo. You went beyond the red lines. We go with you beyond the red line. And if you hit us again, we will not use ballistic missiles that are, because they've used 20-year-old missiles, 10-year-old missiles, 5-year-old, and 3-year-old. And they have much more advanced missiles that can cause real damage. So the intention was not that. And also, they've used two types of missile fuel. One solid fuel that is deployable and hit in only a few minutes, and a liquid fuel that needs more than 30 minutes to 60 minutes to be deployed, where everybody will going to see it. So it was a preparation in the air for the Americans and their allies to see it and to be prepared for it. It was not theatrical, as many assumed. It was a message, and the message reached the objective.
Last question, Elijah, and I appreciate you making yourself available to us on what I know is a very busy day for you. There's a lot of concern, a lot of interest, and a lot of curiosity about Iran's nuclear intention. People asking the question, depending on who, does Iran have a nuclear bomb? Are they seeking a nuclear weapons program? And what's the status of any attempts of Iran to get a nuclear weapon up and running? What's your take on any or all of those questions, Elijah?
When Israel attacked the Natanz nuclear facility in Iran, the Iranian raised the nuclear enrichment from 20% to 60%. The most difficult part of the nuclear production is between 0 to 20. Now they have reached 60, they need a few weeks only to go from 60 to 90% the grade needed in purity to make a nuclear bomb. Now Iran has moved also from the centrifuge, from IR-1 that was allowed to have, according to the JCPOA nuclear deal that was signed by Barack Obama and teared off by President Donald Trump. And today they have IR-6 and IR-8, much more advanced, that can produce more nuclear products. And they have a lot of nuclear reserve purity they did not send to Russia, according to the JCPOA, because the JCPOA fell. So Iran has always said, I am not interested in making a bomb. However, the only change that happened in the last 24 hours is when the IRGC general responsible for the protection of the nuclear site, that is under Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the supreme leader of the Iranian Revolution, came out and said, we will revise our decision if we are under the attack. That we have never heard since 1979. And for the first time, Iran is saying if you push me too far, I'm going to have a nuclear bomb. Now, from the Iranian perspective, having a very advanced drone and ballistic missiles and a missile program is more than enough to use to impose deterrence, because the only country that used nuclear bombs is America, and that during the Second World War. Russia did not use it during the ongoing Ukrainian war. This is why there is no need for nuclear bombs. However, the Iranians are coming to the conclusion that having nuclear bombs can really impose deterrence, not to use it, but to tell those who have appetite to attack Iran, don't do it because we have a nuclear capability, nuclear bomb capability, because Iran has a nuclear scientific capability, but no bomb. So now it is up really to the Israelis and the Americans, and mainly to the Americans, to go to Iran and say, well, perhaps it's the time to sit back on the table and go back to the JCPOA and have a new one where we are all happy and lift the 4,632 sanctions that the Americans impose on Iran, or continue to pretend like nothing has happened and push Iran to have a nuclear bomb.
Mm-hmm.
What do we want? Is it not the question I can answer?
Well, we're probably going to have to hold that discussion for another day. Elijah, I appreciate you joining us so last minute and with so much going on. Really appreciate the insight on this. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. If you want to comment on any portion of our conversation, you can give me a call, 1-800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. Noam Layden is waiting in the wings. We'll get an update on all the news stories he's covering straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York, New York. In a city that doesn't sleep.
30 minutes after the hour, the great Frank Sinatra singing New York, New York. A birthday bumper music selection from the lovely and talented Lisa Esselstyn, who is celebrating her birthday today in California. We are very, very pleased to be joined once again, as we are every morning at around this time, by the one and only Noam Layden.
Stand by for the Other Side of Midnight's news.
From New York City, the Other Side of Midnight and its affiliated stations present national and international news with Frank Morano and news director Noam Layden. Their summary of the world news and personal comments. Get the rest of the story.
Hello, no.
Good morning, Frank. Happy Friday. I was listening very intently to the interview you just did with the reporter out of Belgium.
Thank
about
you.
What's going on in Iran. I wanted to add one piece of, because I wouldn't be doing my job as mm-hmm. news director. I don't know that he said this, and I apologize if he did, because I was listening to as much as I could. We're getting word that there was some sort of nuclear research facility in Isfahan, in Iran, that was hit by a drone.
No, that is almost the exact opposite of what he said.
Yeah, so and it's pretty good information, and I think it'll end up being accurate. So You know, obviously they were not going after civilian populations in this attack, or I shouldn't say obviously, but they weren't going after civilian populations in this attack. But there is a well-known nuclear research facility in this small town. And we have word the broken windows and that maybe it was taken apart. So,
really?
Of course, as more information comes into us, we'll pass it on to you. But that's the latest we have on
so,
it.
So, yeah, what he had said, if people just tuning in, was that the three drones were basically intercepted and destroyed in the air. And they didn't get to destroy anything on the ground, nuclear or non-nuclear.
Right. You know how these things are. The scenes are so fluid. The numbers change. Sure. The information changes. And it could change five more times. But we'll have somebody, by the way, and I'll give them myself a plug. 5 o'clock, we'll have somebody on who may have more information on it. So you can tune in then.
Got it. By the way, if people want to hear Noam around the country, they can absolutely listen at WABCRadio.com and hear the latest on this, which is obviously an ongoing story and a lot of information coming in.
On a much lighter note, but still a big story business-wise, there is a shortage of housing all across the country. Some of it is just the high interest rates and people who are getting out of college or into their first or second jobs don't have the money to pay these high interest rates, right? 7%, really high. But one of the other biggest issues is baby boomers are getting in the way. And you have this younger generation who blames everything on baby boomers as it is, but there might be some legitimacy to this. It seems that baby boomers are staying in those large homes that they bought 30, 40 years ago, and they're not retiring in the way that the generation before them did, going to Florida or someplace south or maybe out to Arizona. And part of the reason is they like being in a big house and they don't want to give it up. And a vast percentage of them, about 80%, own these houses outright. So there's no mortgage to pay anymore. It's just paying maybe, depending on what state you're in, property taxes. So it's incredibly affordable. They want the kids to come home on the weekends or during holidays with the kids and have room to house everybody. Lots of times when you retire to these communities in Florida, they're much smaller homes. And with the interest rates being as high as they are at 7%, they say, hey, I'm going to lose money. I have this piece of property. And this one woman in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, was talking about how she bought this house in the North Hills of Pittsburgh, which is a really nice neighborhood. It is a 4-bedroom home. She bought it for $240,000 back in 1991. This is a large home. Mm-hmm. She is worth a lot of money now. She owns it. She goes, why should I give it up? I feel bad that there's a younger generation who needs homes with more bedrooms, but I'm not ready to give this house up. In past generations, we watched as people got older. And of course, those numbers tick up each year as the life expectancy usually does as well, that people left. And when they became empty nesters, they moved somewhere to a smaller home. They downsized. They went someplace warmer. It is not happening in the numbers that it used to. And so now you have this generation of people who are in their 30s and 40s and starting to have families. And they're having a really difficult time finding homes. So they're trying to come up with some solutions. And of course, some of it would just be if the mortgage rate went down, these people might move out of their homes because then they would just be able to spend less money on the next home.
By the way, when they started raising these interest rates, that's exactly what John Catsimatidis predicted. He said this would destroy the real estate market. And it seems like we've sort of gotten the worst of both worlds in that it really hasn't necessarily broken in the back of inflation as it was intended to do, but it is keeping people from selling their houses.
It is. And these boomers also, when they do move out, a lot of times they want to be in a home that caters to them. So there are no stairs, a garage where you can pull your car right into. And there are not enough of these communities. As much as I seem to drive past a ton of these communities, apparently they're all have been eaten up. People are in them. And again, some of that is people are living longer. They're living a little bit of a healthier life. And so they're staying in those senior communities a little bit longer as well. But this middle group, this baby boomer group, is apparently really getting in the way of the younger generation moving into bigger houses. And there's just not enough houses being built fast enough. Of course, then the mortgage rate in some ways being the biggest number there, that it's making it unaffordable for everybody to move around.
You know, the last laugh, it would seem, though, would go to the millennials and the Generation Zers, just because the baby boomers, well, they can stay in that house as long as they want to. Eventually, they're all going to die.
That's true.
I mean, Forbes did. I mean, eventually we're all going to die, but, you know, presumably the baby boomers will die before the millennials. But the Forbes did an article about a month ago saying that the millennials and Generation Z, to a lesser extent, are poised to inherit $90 trillion worth of wealth, and it may make them the wealthiest generation in history. And it seems like right now they're having a very tough time, but if they just wait a year, 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, they're going to be sitting pretty.
Yeah, well, that wealth transfer is well underway. Mm. We're seeing it. I mean, that money is being passed down generationally in a big way. And you're right, over the next decade, two decades, even more so. So you're right, there's something to that, but not if you have a young family and you want to move into a house tomorrow. That's not going to happen.
The guy around the corner from me is moving to one of these senior facilities. Do you want to take a look at his house? Maybe it'd be good fit for you guys.
I'm actually in a nice house right now. Thankfully, the baby boomers who lived in mine, they got out.
It'd be fun, though, to be in the neighborhood.
Oh, you know, I actually liked your neighborhood a lot.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
It was very neighborhood-y.
Yeah, exactly.
Where I live, I don't know anybody.
Yeah. Oh, no. We know everybody.
Yeah, I saw everybody I talked to at that party. They were like, oh, I live two houses down or whatever. Yeah. I thought that was great. It was like old school neighborhood.
Well, think about it. Take a look at the house.
All right. Well, can you tell them? Give me a good price.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I love, we were stupid when we were kids. Maybe you could even say we're stupid now, and a lot of people would nod their heads.
I would, but our listeners would.
Yeah, right. I've seen sometimes online they do. So the latest challenge on TikTok that has gone viral with kids is the blackout challenge. Have you heard about this?
Yes.
So the blackout challenge, for those who have not, is kids tape themselves, because it's all about taping yourself and putting it up on some social media platform. In this case, it's TikTok. You hold your breath until you black out. I was trying to sort of figure out how that's even possible to hold your breath that long, because eventually, don't you just let out the air? Your body would say, okay, I need to breathe. But if you go on TikTok today, and it is a little frightening, and you put out blackout challenge, I did this yesterday, there's just endless videos. They're all tend to be middle school kids, maybe a little bit older, sitting in circles, and they're watching their friends black out. Now, there's been a number of deaths, actually. There have been some teenagers who've died. Thankfully, it's not a lot, but there have been some. But now schools are just going to parents and they're saying, hey, let your kids know. This is not the smartest thing to do the blackout challenge. I know there's peer pressure. And almost all these videos, by the way, it is a number of kids watching. So it's not somebody doing it by themselves. It's kids in a circle or bunched up together. They get one's holding the camera, shooting the video, and you can watch as kids pass out on TikTok. I found it all a little frightening, but apparently for the teenagers, they love this. I mean, they have tens of millions of views.
Wow. I mean, that is frightening, I think.
Yeah. In one case, actually, we were watching the story. We talked to somebody yesterday in New Jersey at South Orange Middle School, where they took one kid to the hospital last week who stopped breathing after doing the blackout challenge. Thank God she's okay. But yeah, it's like unbelievable. Did you see what San Francisco is doing? So they had these nationwide protests, pro-Palestinian protests earlier this week, where they shut down just about everything. It's become a regular thing. And I'm not just singling out Palestinian protesters.
No, but those have been the most visible.
They have been. Yeah. So I don't know what that was.
As a keyboard, you dropped that. Okay.
So the Palestinian protesters earlier this week, they shut down a whole bunch of places all across the country. It was O'Hare Airport. People were stuck waiting for hours. They missed flights.
Huh.
And then one of the places that you might be really surprised was they shut down the Golden Gate Bridge. And this was for about 4.5 hours. And they're doing this new technique, these demonstrators, where they tie themselves to each other. And then they put this PC piping through it all. And it makes it much more difficult for the police to unattach them to what they're attached to. In this case, it was the Golden Gate Bridge. So now you have these people who are waiting for hours to get to important places. Nurses missed shifts. Doctors were late. Kids were late to school. Your typical stuff that happens when you close down a bridge. But here's the interesting part. In one of the most liberal cities in the nation, you might even say the most liberal, the DA of San Francisco came out yesterday and said, it is time to punish these people who get in our way. So she's actively asking people in San Francisco to file reports of what happened to them, what it cost them when they lost this time. And now they're going to go after these protesters and try to get them to pay for the time that was lost for people who were stuck on the Golden Gate Bridge. Now, we've seen other cities try to do this before. She's very serious. She said, I'm sick and tired of this. As of yesterday, when she held the press conference, she said, we got about a dozen people who filed right away. But, you know, it takes a little while for those stories to seep into all the people. Not everybody's tuned into the news every day watching it. But as this gets shared, my guess is those numbers will start to tick up. And it'll be interesting to see a place like San Francisco go after these protesters and see, she says, if I can make it happen, I'm going to make them pay and I will hand that money over to these people for their lost time.
I think that is great. For starters, I would say this about whatever cause these people were protesting, even if it was something that I agreed with.
Right.
I think if you want to protest, that's great. But once you're shutting down a bridge and keeping doctors from getting to their job, nurses, keeping kids from getting to school, it's not protesting. It's destructive. And I don't think that's an exaggeration. First of all, I don't know what you're doing in terms of winning over converts to your cause by shutting down a bridge. Doesn't seem like, oh, they shut down our bridge and screwed up our whole day. Let me agree with them now.
Right.
But I think this is great. I've had a number of conversations with Professor John Banzeff, who is a very distinguished law professor, I think from George Washington University, George Washington. And he's been saying that the key to getting these protests to stop doing these things is for people that are affected to file civil suits, because a lot of these people are arrested. Maybe they'll get a disorderly conduct charge, or if anything, a lot of times the charges are just dropped, and then it's well worth it for their cause and their things. But if you actually get a judgment against them, that not only, you know, screws up their credit rating, but it's something that they're having to make up for potentially for years. So it's great that the San Francisco County DA, Brooke Jenkins, is, you know, sort of on the same page on this. I think that's great. Now, she came in as a result of the recall of the previous DA in San Francisco, right?
Yeah. And so she's more conservative, which in San Francisco is not that conservative, but she's more conservative than the DA that was there. It'll be interesting to see if they're able to make this happen. She was really angry during this press conference yesterday, as she should have been, for the people who, thousands of people were really affected by it. Maybe even tens of thousands if you think about the people who showed up at these doctors' offices waiting for appointments, right? It wasn't just the doctors who couldn't get there.
I mean, it's horrendous. It's evil.
Yeah. You want one more?
Sure, a quick one.
Did you see this whole thing with this NASA piece of space junk that fell into the home? Did you do the story? And I apologize.
I mentioned it briefly with Dr. Sky, but tell us about it, because a lot of people may not have heard.
So we have more information about this. We were trying to get in touch with this family. This was in Naples, Florida, about 3 weeks ago. Thankfully, this family was not home. All of a sudden, this piece of, they didn't know what it was, but something slams through the roof of their home. It's about 2 pounds, and it came from the sky, and they didn't know what it was, so of course they call the authorities and say, this thing came crashing through our house, what is it? They do an investigation. They say this might have come from the sky, like someone just didn't hammer your house with it. And then they do a longer investigation, and NASA says, oh yeah, that's a piece that we are missing. It's a piece of space junk. So apparently the International Space Station, on a regular basis, when they get rid of certain things, they just put it out into space. And the thought is when it enters the Earth's atmosphere, it burns up.
Yeah.
But now they're frightened because clearly that was not the case here. This was a pallet of used batteries that they had thrown out into space. And the 2 pounds that made it into this home in Jupiter, Florida, was part of that pallet of used batteries. And scientists are now shocked, completely shocked, because their whole theory was everything burns up.
Right.
No problem. How did this get through? And so now they're rethinking about what they're going to do when they throw trash out from the International Space Station, that you can't just put it out there and hope for the best. Thankfully, nobody was hurt here, but now they'll have, if they want to, a nice lawsuit against the space agency.
It is interesting. Space junk is a big problem, and that is a pretty frightening situation. I wonder how all these homeowners insurance policies are going to handle homeowners damage.
I don't think that's on there.
I don't think so either. Yeah, that's why I don't think they're going to pay. Thank you, Noam. Sure. Have a great weekend.
And now you know the rest of the story.
Well, the world's largest democratic elections begin in India today as nearly a billion voters head to the polls. Over the next 6 weeks, voters will determine the composition of the 543-member legislature, and it's this unit of the legislature, it's the lower house of their parliament, that is responsible for nominating a prime minister. This is really going to be interesting because the Prime Minister Modi and his Hindu nationalist party are seeking a third consecutive term against a coalition of parties against the Indian National Developmental Inclusive Alliance. So we'll see where this goes. But the election process in India is really interesting. If you're a political junkie and if you like to study comparative governments, the Israeli government is really interesting to watch. The Italian government, really interesting to watch. Japanese government, really interesting to watch. But nothing more fascinating to learn about than the Indian government and political system, because the election process is conducted in seven phases covering various regions, and it's designed to ensure efficient management of resources, security, and high voter turnout. India mandates, are you ready for this? A polling station within 1.2 miles of every home, including the world's highest polling booth in the Himalayas. Can you imagine going to vote in the Himalayas? My goodness. So you have until June 1st if you're listening to us in India and want to vote. Now all of a sudden I could go for Indian food. So, all right. 800-848-9222. We'll do 15 seconds of fame in a moment. But Ina in Manhattan has been holding. Hi, Ina.
Hello, Mr. Marina. Hi. Thank you for bringing that person on to explain everything. It was a very good interview of talking about the missiles and the war between Israel and the other
Iran.
Country.
Thank you.
Yeah, Iran. Yes, it was very nice. I mean, you're the brains of WABC. Superstar.
Well, thank you, Ina. There's a lot of people around here much smarter than me, believe me. If I have any great talent, it's knowing who to ask the right questions to, but I appreciate that. Thank you. All right. Why don't we do 15 seconds of fame in a moment? I had some other stuff that I was going to try and get to here, but we'll save that for Monday. Got a lot of interesting stuff coming up on Monday. Really interesting week of shows next week as well. Congressman Tim Burchett is going to be back. He's the fellow that we spoke about UFOs with recently. He's really becoming one of my favorite congressmen, honestly. And I loved what he had to say about FISA and warrantless wiretapping. He's going to join us. And a lot of other interesting folks that are in the pipeline for next week as well. And maybe John Katsimatidis as well. We had hoped to talk with John today, but I think both of our schedules were a little crazy because of what's happening in the Middle East. So hopefully John will join us on Monday. He's doing something really interesting with nuclear energy. And this could potentially be a watershed moment in the future of American energy independence. So we'll see where that goes. All right. 15 seconds of fame in a moment. 800-848-9222. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Side of midnight.
To the late, great Andy B for making this song possible. We miss you as a listener and as a frequent caller to this program, but we're glad that we have this song to remember you by. Appreciate that. Hopefully you guys are doing something fun this weekend. And hopefully, if you have something to say that's 15 seconds or less, you are wise enough to dial 800-848-9222. You can also email me over the weekend as well. I got some great emails during the show today. I'm going to read those on Tuesday. My email is frank.morano@redappleaudionetworks.com. That's frank.morano@redappleaudionetworks.com. And you could find us on Twitter at Frank Morano. Hey, you know, big day for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. yesterday. Everybody was talking about how the rest of the Kennedy family, not the rest of them, but many of the rest of the Kennedy family all endorsed President Biden. But it was a big day because he actually made it onto the ballot in Michigan. He was endorsed by the Natural Law Party in Michigan, which is a party that used to be a national party, but it's really kind of it's now defunct. But he's doing pretty well with his ballot access in terms of he's on the ballot in Iowa. He submitted enough signatures in a whole bunch of other states, including Nevada, including New Hampshire and Hawaii, North Carolina, Idaho, Nebraska, Utah. And now he's on the ballot in Michigan. And obviously that's pretty important because that's a swing state. A lot of people who were unhappy with President Biden during the primaries, now they have somewhere to go. So I should have asked Debbie Schlussel about that when she was here, since she is in Michigan, but there's only so much time. All right. 800-848-9222 if you want to be heard for 15 seconds.
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Fame! Billy.
Yes, with Sid.
Neil.
First, happy Passover to all. Second, those lazy astronauts to bring those used batteries to Home Depot for recycling.
Raji.
Hearken, you masochist suckers, hearken. The paradigm of self-love, narcissism, and vulgarism, Sid Rosenberg considers himself too smart and his listeners too dumb to call a show. Thank you.
Rich.
Hey, congratulations to Katie Couric as she transitions to Hillary Clinton. It's a great look, Katie. Keep it up.
Paulie.
Frank, would you ever consider putting a bomb shelter in your backyard?
Yeah, I would consider it. I mean, I don't know if it's worth the investment, but I'd consider it, sure. Justin.
I got a word puzzle for you. How do you get a giant elephant into the front door of a Safeway supermarket?
I give up.
You take the S out of safe and the F out of way.
Okay. Mike.
Morning, Frank. my Uncle Clem in Naomi from Minnesota. I think it was either Brainerd or White Bear Lake. So they go on vacation to Pango Pango, and they're on the beach. And Uncle Clem goes off into the dense jungle to get some coconuts, and they never found him. All they found were his bones. Kind of like Uncle Posey. And that's the truth, Jack.
Ray.
Frank, you're throwing your vote away. Kennedy don't have a chance. His own family won't even vote for him. Thanks.
Evelyn. First of all, Evelyn, I want to thank you for that great Seinfeld children's book. Carmine's been reading it every night.
You're very welcome, Frank. I want to thank you for mentioning Morano Vision this week on YouTube. Very, very enjoyable. Appreciate you mentioning that on radio. Thanks, Frank.
Brandon.
Hey, just want to say happy birthday to Sid Rosenberg.
Oh, that's nice. And Rusty.
Yes, Smarty Pants. I'm glad you choose Kennedy over Trump. That goes to show you what a phony you are, the two-face.
There you have it, Rusty. Thank you. I'm glad we got my glad we got that exposed right away. All right. That slams the lid on things for today. I hope you have a great weekend. And hopefully we get some nice weather wherever you happen to be, and get some time to relax, catch up on some reading, get up on some work. And if you missed any portion of the shows this week, catch up on some podcasts. Frank Morano, good day.